From the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, this is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. We're staying in the future this week. Last week, we looked at what motor vehicles and autonomous driving looks like in the future. This week, we're swapping from four wheels to two, pedalling our way around 30 laps this week. It's a new balance, if you like. Then, off the bike, we talk to Mr. McLaren about how to succeed with a supercar company in a battlefield littled and littered with dead supercar rivals and cars. If you've got a lot of loot, here is one way to part with it. Be part of that in considerable style. Mike Fluitt is our motor mouth this week. All the va-va vrooms on 30 laps. So, without any further ado, let's kick off, shall we? From the Financial Review magazine of March 2020, we look at a new balance. There are spectacular changes in the market for vehicles with two wheels, and this is written by Michael Stahl. Diverse, imaginative, and exciting things are happening on two wheels. Everything from kick scooters to 300 kilometre an hour plus motorcycles, and a whole new electric motored menagerie in between. The category boom may have no purer expression than the basic kick scooter. Small, lightweight, scissor-folding for portability, and more popular and varied than ever. For an initial spend of a couple of $100, a kick scooter can reduce the walking times by half. Computer-targeted big-wheel scooters from brands such as Micro and Razor with 20-kilometre diameter wheels roll more comfortably and confidently. Inflatable tyres and suspension bring an increase in weight, whereas adding a battery and a small electric motor adds further heft and mountainous piles of red tape. Legality is different from state to state. A mainstream 200-watt e-scooter model usually costs $500 and upwards, with battery range anywhere between 10 to 50 kilometres. Car makers key to rebrand this as mobility companies are leaping on board. Hyundai, for example, has shown a 7.7-kilogram triple-folding e-scooter that docks in the door pocket of its Ioniq electric car. The big trend in bicycles is the niche creeping of categories and subcategories of road and off-road bikes. Gravel bikes are identifiably road cycles with drop bars giving a crouched posture, but can be fitted out with a 650B, which is a 27.5-inch motorbike tyre. Riders can travel quickly on-road, yet have the freedom to turn onto a trail. The Bicycle Industries Association reports more than 50 brands of e-bikes are on the market, with sales three times that of what they were in 2016. Australian laws governing e-bikes were updated in 2012 to bring them into line with Europe. This means a maximum assisted speed of 25 kilometres an hour and power of 200 watts for throttle bikes capable of being ridden on motor power alone and 250 watts for pedal bikes. Pedalix supply assistance only when the rider is pedalling. They typically have the motor mid-mounted, helping maintain a more natural cycling experience, and can augment pedalling effort by as much as 400%. One eye-catcher is the specialised Levo Expert Cathron, part of a new brand of 29er downhill bike, with great wheels and near motorcycle-grade suspension. It's a serious piece of downhill kit, and with its lightweight aluminium carbon fibre frame and 250-watt motor assistance, it can be serious uphill too. Australian company Michael Blast's e-bikes ooze retro appeal. The Greaser model recalls 1920 US track motorcycles, while the Vacay hints at quirky 1970s motor scooters. Connectivity is a new point of manufacturing focus too. The Cybrick e-Legend smart bike, not yet available in Australia, has Jetson-style-esque styling. I think that should be Jetson-esque styling, and is the first bike to be equipped with Amazon's Alexa. The handlebar mounted interface enables the rider to ask directions, request songs, or boil the smart kettle at home. Crikey. For a true alternative and virtuous power source, some manufacturers are looking to the fuel cell, which produces electric current via the spitting of an atom molecules. It's the second typo in this article. It is the splitting of hydrogen molecules. One prototype from Linde, the German industrial gas giant, delivers a range of 100 kilometres from a refillable 3.5 gram hydrogen cylinder. Mainstream motorcycle brands have been slow to try alternate power sources. The introduction of the TT Zero Electric category in 2010 at the fabled Isle of Man motorcycle races was intended as a catalyst for mainstream manufacturers. But it was decidedly unsporty Harley-Davidson that first unveiled the true e-moto sports model in 2014. With its live wire, it went on sale in 2019, BMW Motorrad has since early 2018 offered the C Evolution, an electric comparison to the C Series motor scooters. Late last year, it vowed and wowed with the Vision DC Roadster, a futuristic naked bike concept said to be the pointer to the brand's future. For those who don't know, a naked bike means you sit upright, primarily, as in a roadster where you sit in the bike and a race bike where you sit forward. If you ride a naked bike, you don't ride naked. That is not to be recommended under any circumstances. You ride sitting upright. The advantage of that is it's, for you and I, it's more affordable. But back to the story. The truth is, disruptors already have the jump. Electric scooter and motorcycle sales in Europe in 2018 marked a staggering increase of 100% over the previous year, according to MyMotorcyclistData.com. 50% of those 43,500 sales went to scooter brands New, Gongoro and Govex, the oldest of which entered the market in 2012. Gee, that's amazing. Zero Motorcycles, founded in California in 2006, offers a well-rounded range of enduro, trail and road e-motos, headed by the handsome SRF naked bike with a range up to 320 kilometres. The weight is at only 220 kilometres. The weight is only 220 kg and is about 40 kg over the odds for a comparable internal combustion machine such as a Ducati Monster 821. Speaking of sexy Italian motorbikes, there's already been an electric one in Energica, whose 240 kilometre an hour Eco model debuted in 2015 and is now joined by a naked bike and street fighter models. While in Redica, an Ouse's familiar superbike design, Belgian brand Sacolair developed its racing prototype for the Isle of Man TT Zero, and from those involved, the road legal Manx X7. Lots of acronyms here, folks, but that's the bike world. Mind you, motor vehicles aren't much better. Anyway. Indeed, superbikes have never been more exciting, as evidenced by Ducati's breathtakingly beautiful 157.4 kilowatt Panigale 1100 V4 and Honda's imminent all-new 160kW Fireblade 1000. Both machines have aerodynamics and electronics derived from MotoGP racing. Aston Martin is collaborating with a recently resurrected British brand, Brow Superior. Their joint AMB 001 evokes the shape of Aston's Valkyrie hypercar, and its 1000cc V-twin is both super and turbo charged. However, just over 100 examples will be built, and with no road legality, many will end up as wall ornaments. BMW is racing to the past with its R18-2 Classic Cruiser concept, which at the very least previews a new 1800cc version of the venerable Boxer twin engine, which dates back to 1923. Meanwhile, Harley-Davidson is responding to the downturn in the baby boomer-fueled cruiser segment by entering new categories. It will launch a 1250 Pan-American adventure model, Euro-style sports bikes with further electric motorcycles and even e-bikes. Not a bad response from a legacy brand. As for Royal Enfield, the world's oldest surviving motorcycle brand, after a number of mechanical and styling upgrades to its Bullet model since the mid-2000s, an all-new but still retro 650 twin, it will become the fastest growing motorcycle brand in the past decade. And that, folks, is that. So that was written by Michael Stahl, A New Balance. There are spectacular changes in the market for vehicles with two wheels. It comes from the Finn Review, March 2020 magazine. A song called Lucy Rider. Quite apt, I thought. Now we go from super bikes to supercars. And the same magazine, a big Financial Review luxury magazine, the autumn edition 2020, Mr. McLaren. Most sports car companies fail, usually very quickly. But McLaren CEO Mike Fluitt was driven to buck that trend. And this is written by Tony Davis. Mike Fluitt was once near the very top of the automotive industry. He'd risen from the factory floor to running Ford's motor company's manufacturing in Europe, building 9,000 cars a day across 23 factories. Yet he walked away to join a sports car outfit that would, if the sheer weight of history was anything to go by, almost certainly fail. 99% of car makers go belly up, and the one he agreed to join, McLaren Automotive, was already in trouble. McLaren was primarily a racing car company. Its previous foray into the risky world of sports cars in the early 1990s had stalled expensively after just 64 road cars were built. Then, in 2011, it launched a new attempt to build a mid-engine supercar and was talking about volumes of 4,000 a year, a seemingly ludicrous number. The product at that point was weak, Fluitt is now prepared to admit, but he took the risk because of his love of sports cars, particularly British ones. "That's what I've always spent all my money and all my time and all my passion on," he says. "You need proof? Look at his garage. There are five historic Lotuses, plus, of course, a couple of McLarens." Fluitt admits he's looked at various other opportunities through the years. "I've always wanted to take something in the UK, make it a success, and make it a competitor of these successful global brands like Ferrari and Porsche and the Lamborghini. Every time, though, the rational part of my brain took over and I thought, this isn't going to work. This is Richard Lyon, 30 Laps with Dick, and today we're halfway through our journey and we're talking to Mr. McLaren. Well, not Mr. McLaren, but the man who runs McLaren. Anyway, back to the story. So why McLaren? Well, it had good funding. It was not an ideal product, says Fluitt, and a name that was known around the world due to its Formula One successes. What's more, the 1990s McLaren road car that had proved such a commercial failure, the three-seater F1 Coupe, had since become one of the world's most valuable collector cars, giving the new venture a brand halo. The other lure for Fluitt was working with Ron Dennis, an inspirational though dour, some say black-humoured, character, with a genius for winning and an obsession for detail bordering on the OCD. This former race mechanic ran McLaren Formula One team and wanted to beat Ferrari on the road as well. Just as an aside, we started off saying it didn't have good funding. In fact, McLaren did have good funding, and that was one of the main reasons that Mike decided to join it. My apologies for that. Ron Dennis has supreme personal confidence, says Fluitt. I mean, he's a great guy, and you need people like him in this world. But it was incredibly hard to work for him. Why? It could be anything, says Fluitt with a smile. He points to the table in front of us. I mean, this would be a nightmare. The first thing he'd have to do before having this conversation with you would be to tidy up the desk and line up these mineral water bottles and get rid of all the emptiness. That mentality means McLaren has the most beautiful, not to mention clean and orderly, car factory in the world, with tool trolleys designed to line up exactly with the white tiles on the floor. Fluitt says Dennis, who retired in 2016, had no room for self-doubt and little tolerance of being told something couldn't be done. But when Dennis realised building cars was so much different to winning races, he admitted he needed to recruit some traditional car-making skills, which finally gave Fluitt a start with the British supercar sports car maker. The 2011 McLaren, known as the 12C, was quickly improved under Fluitt's watch, and a hybrid supercar, the PI, was a sellout, despite a price tag of US $1 million plus. I always think a P1 put us on the map. We were 2 years in, and people were debating whether our car or the Ferrari was better. Implausibly, McLaren Automotive was funding itself by 2013 and passed that impossible target of 4,000 cars a year in 2018, selling 4,806 units. The company is aiming for 6,000 by 2025. Today, only Ferrari sells more hard-edged sports cars each year. Fluitt says the number of people who can afford such cars is growing, but so is the competition. You've got to find things that excite people, and there are different tastes around the world and different individual tastes. That said, the McLaren Automotive CEO is adamant the company will stick to its mid-engine sports car formula. It won't follow Lamborghini, Aston Martin, and almost everyone else down the SUV path. We'll never do cars that insulate the driver from the driving experience. It should be about exciting the driver, he says. Fluitt can say that, because he believes sports cars will survive well into the future. I can't see why we should stop enjoying them, and if we can, use technology to make these cars relevant and acceptable within the emissions and environmental frameworks that exist. Why not? If they stop being fun, they stop being relevant, in my view. The next generation of McLarens will be hybridised, he says. Not fully electric, I can't work out how pure EV works for us at the moment. We can't get the power range combination. But they will be a hybrid. McLaren recently announced the spectacular Elva Streamliner, the fastest in a line of limited edition, ultra expensive specials. These have generally sold out on day one, at least partly because their exclusiveness and desirability have made such cars appreciating assets. It's so out of our price range, folks, I think I better play some music that you would probably play in the CD spot of your McLaren car as you drove away from the dealership, because we never would get the chance to do it in person, I would imagine.
In December, earthquakes in the heartland, bad air index on a flashing morning sign.
Yep, I would guess you'd be grinning ear from ear as you shot down the street. Anyway, back to reality. McLaren initially announced that the Elva would be restricted to 399 units. But the feedback from our customers is that they think the car should be more exclusive than that. Crikey. So we've capped it at 249, says Fluitt, somehow presenting this rare setback as something else. Isn't it a bit like the manager in This Is Spinal Tap saying the band's popularity isn't waning, their appeal is becoming more selective? Fluitt laughs briefly. Exclusivity is key when people are spending £1 million on a car. Whilst I'm not a great fan of buying these things as an investment, you don't want them to be losing a heap of money either. I get asked all the time, how did you decide to build 106, I beg your pardon, speed tails, or 375 P1s, or 500 Sennas? And it's really hard judgment call. Those three McLaren models sold out almost immediately, Fluitt says the Elva's issue is that it's a completely open car with no windscreen, so can't be road registered in some markets. Nevertheless, the company is having success with something even more exclusive, one-off bodies produced with input from the customer. It's a very expensive thing to do, says Fluitt, before adding, one thing that never ceases to amaze me is how much people will spend to have something unique. He admits that between one-offs and heavily personalised versions of regular models, several customers have been in the 2.5 million to 5 million pounds space. That's pounds sterling space. Wow. That means some people are prepared to pay 10 million to have something unique, and to have it with a McLaren badge. Fanfare indeed. Hot off the press, talking about supercars. Derek Fung writes from the Drive magazine, a special Bentley Continental GT has been built to compete in the GP ice race in Zermatt in Austria. In order for the ice race Continental to meet a racing safety standards, the one-off car has been fitted with a rear roll bar and roll cage, a fire extinguisher and Sparco racing seats with harnesses. From the outside, the most obvious modifications are the raised ride height, a 15mm increase in track width, and a complementary wheel arch extension, and the suite of laser high-performance lights. There is also an eye-catching blue-to-white livery with mountain graphics and alloy wheels painted bright blue, with the rear paint finished in black. Given this Continental will be competing on an all-purpose built ice track, it rides on studded set of Pirelli Scorpion Ice 02 tyres. Other changes include a custom Akaprovic exhaust and a unique roof rack with a pair of Bomber skis. Like regular road-going versions of the Continental GT, the ice race car is powered by a 6-litre twin-turbo W12 engine, 467 kilowatts and 900 newton metres. During this year's GP ice race, this special Continental will be driven by Junior World Rally Championship driver Katie Munnings. The GP ice race includes two events, a standard racing section and a skip-during competition where a skier, in this case Sven, I love it, they're always called Sven Ruba, is towed by the car over a course made from snow and ice. So, from the ridiculous to the more ridiculous, a GT Bentley Continental, specially built for an ice race in Zell-Arzee in Austria. That was written by Derek Fung from drive.com.au. And not forgetting that Mr. McLaren, most sports cars companies fail, usually very quickly. McLaren CEO Mike Fluitt was driven to buck that trend. That was written by Tony Davis, and it was in the Financial Review Luxury Autumn Edition magazine. Afford to buy a Financial Review, I guess you get car reviews on supercars. Makes sense, doesn't it? Well, that about wraps up the supercar edition and superbike edition for another week. I hope you've enjoyed those stories. What's happening on two wheels, both electric and traditional, superbikes to suitcase bikes to suitcase push bikes. I've covered them all. Some pretty interesting stuff happening there. And of course, we spoke to Mr. Fluitt, the CEO of McLaren, making a go of it for that wonderful mark that was seen as so famous in Formula One. And you have to be spending a lot of money if you want to drive one of their roadworthy motor vehicles. There's a few kicking around Sydney. You will probably hear it long before you see it. And then we finished up with a U-Butte GT Continental Bentley for a snow race in Austria later this year. Well, I guess it's still going to be on later this year. No sign of it being cancelled at this stage. Thank you very much for your company this afternoon. I've really enjoyed having a chat to you, as always. Next week, who knows? We'll think of something to talk about, I'm sure. Enjoy yourself. Stay safe. Bye for now.